hello and welcome back to AA Opera Podcast, and what a privilege it is to introduce you to episode 100, baby!
What? We are so giddy.
And we've also had coffee and sweets by this point, so you're in for a very, very bouncy, energetic episode, I am sure.
Yes. And we have exciting, exciting stuff coming this episode as well. But yeah, because I was in Israel last week, I brought back some candy that my mom had in the basement. And it's 12 o'clock and that's what we had for first thing.
Yeah, that's our lunch today.
Yeah, to be honest, we don't really have any food in the house because the shop arrives on Thursday and this is Tuesday.
This is Tuesday. No, that's fine. Caffeinate me and I'm absolutely there.
That's all good. It's all good. But this is very exciting to be here with you for the roundest number of all.
The roundest number of all. And the one that has just been like building it up week on week. Not even week on week. I think month on month. And now that we're here, it feels amazing.
Yes. Also, with every like 10 episodes we did, it was like, oh my God. It's episode 90, and now it's episode 100.
Triple digits.
Triple digits. Blah, 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 blah.
I'll say that again. Triple digits.
No, I think you can leave in my mumble because that was just a reaction to how big that number is.
But Abby, how are you doing?
I'm very good. I'm excited for March because we are on the cusp at the moment of March. I don't know. I'm just like, I don't know. We'll get back to why I'm excited for March. But yeah, what about you? How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Similar thing. Just February was a funny month because we had half term and I'd very much operate on a school calendar with all of the teaching, but half terms are just a bit tricky because they all take half term at different times and
can we get
confusing.
All the schools to agree on what week they're taking half term?
Yes, please. Yes, please. Because I do not function very well outside of a routine. And I was scrolling through my calendar and saw that March is, you know, a nice big month and there's no school holidays planned in March.
There's just some school strikes, but that's fine.
I mean, what's not on strike at the minute? But, you know, we survive and thrive on that. So, yeah, just all good. But, I mean, we do have a wonderful plan for you guys today. We sat down to plan the episode and actually realised that we haven't actually put ourselves in the hot seat, have we?
We have not.
So that's basically what we're going to be doing. I'm a little bit nervous. This must be like what a guest feels like before they interview with us.
Yeah, except you get to listen to the edit and actually edit it.
That is true.
They do. We're going to be honest. Like, all of our guests get to listen to the episodes before they go out. But we basically make most of the editing calls.
Basically, yeah. And I guess we'll get to do that. But I don't think that this one's actually going to need much editing. I think it's going to be quite organic and natural and unique.
Just like us. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen, before we continue, have you ever seen on Instagram the Pasta Queen?
No.
So the Pasta Queen is this woman who's like Italian, lives in Florida, but like makes pasta.
I mean, I may have. I'm literally looking it up right now. Because I follow so many pasta pages.
But the way she ends like every sentence, she goes, and you're going to pour the pasta water to make a gorgeous sauce, just like you are.
Oh, wow. This woman has 1.8 million followers. Why am I not following her?
I don't know.
She's just got
Just watch one of them right before we continue.
Okay. Oh, right. Should we kick this off?
Let's kick this off. First up in the hot seat today is Ashley. How are you feeling today?
I am feeling fabulous.
Wait, I already asked you that. Let's move on.
Yeah. Fair enough.
As we ask all of our guests, first off, please introduce yourself to our audience.
Hello, audience. It's nice to meet you. My name is Ashley Charlton, and I am a performer and podcaster, I think.
No, I'm not going to say that.
What?
I'm going to say you're a pee-pee, but that does not sound good.
No, don't. Please don't. That would not look good on LinkedIn. I think you could leave that in.
It's like Paddy... what is it called? The gambling place? The
Paddy Power.
Paddy Power. Do you work for Paddy Power? No, I'm a performer and a podcaster. Amazing. Can you tell us also, what was your first experience of opera?
Yes. So, my first experience of opera, it was sort of something that I stumbled upon. At the time, I was taking singing lessons, but I was around like 11, 12. So, the idea of singing a particular genre or in a certain way, like classical singing, was not on my radar. However, as a kid, I'd come down to London from time to time and do all of the shows, like a theatre holiday with my mum. And we were just walking around Covent Garden and there was a queue outside of the Opera House. And we thought, well, Opera House, wonder what that's for. And they were selling last minute tickets off for Gianni Schicchi. I can't remember what year this was, but we just joined the queue, thought why not, and then we got tickets in a box on one of the lower boxes for Gianni Schicchi. I had no clue what it was, but I just remember stepping into the Opera House auditorium and just, it took my breath away immediately. So before the opera had even started, I was already in awe of where I was. And I just watched the opera. And I do remember being confused, but also just wowed by what I saw. And the singing really kind of hit me in a way. Like it really just like resonated in a certain way. So that then led to us getting back on the train to Newcastle, and I started to explore classical singing in a new way with more of a focus than what I had before. So that was it for me.
Gianni Schicchi is also a good one to see first, I feel like.
Yeah, because I did recognise O mio bambino caro. And that was nice to have that there, but just the whole spectacle of it. Obviously, you know, the Opera House stage has got so much depth to it. And I can't remember in detail, like, the set, but I just remember, like, kind of looking around a lot and just taking it all in.
Yeah. But that's also what we've also said in the past about how the depth of the stage makes you, like, the 3D aspect of it.
Mm.
You're like constantly looking for something and you're constantly busy doing something. That's why it's so immersive compared to watching a film or television.
Exactly.
But then, a couple of years later, who knows how many years, because you can't remember when it was.
I remember I was not quite a teenager, so it was around then. So you're talking more than 10 years ago.
Yeah.
15 years ago, maybe.
Yeah. But
a long time.
Anyway. Don't say that in front of me. When I first met you at RAM, you had just moved to London from the Northeast. To me, it seemed that within weeks of being here, you had already developed a teaching studio. Hold, I saw that face. That's probably not fully accurate, but how did you come to build your teaching studio?
Okay, yeah. So it's not entirely accurate, and I will give context to this because I think it's important for two reasons. I came to London and thought that studying at RAM would be my, like, where my brain would be. And it was actually a couple of months. I moved to London in August 2018. And just as a disclaimer, I did move down to London with my partner, Lewis. And it goes without saying that moving down with somebody is way easier than doing it all by yourself. So I'm not claiming that I did that in any way. And I was on a buzz for like the first 3 months and then realised that all of the student loan had gone by the October, November, and I hadn't like been spent. It didn't feel like I was overspending or anything, but rent and all of the bills and just paying for the day to day is really expensive. And so the first thing I did was just went on Indeed job site and just got a job at Hyde Park Winter Wonderland selling flashy lights and tickets at Peter Pan on Ice, which, do you know what, was so fun, but it was really, really time consuming working late in the freezing cold during the winter in London, and I was getting paid like minimum wage, and so even though I was working all these extra hours, it just wasn't cutting it. It wasn't paying the bills. So I thought about the skills that I had at my disposal, and I can play the piano to grade 8 standard, and I was obviously singing. It came quite naturally for me to think about teaching. My mum's a music teacher and had taught privately as well, so I kind of had that experience, and I think you kind of subconsciously soak things up watching my mum teach. And so I just think the first thing I did was I thought it would be good if I could teach near RAM, and I went on some of the mum's groups for Marylebone and posted on there, and I think I got one or two students off of that, and then it just grew from there with recommendation with the students that I already had. I also kept a real ear open on the actual RAM Facebook pages, people looking for cover and advertising new students on there. And it was one of those times where I just said yes to everything in order to build the teaching students that I had. Admittedly, to the point where I probably took too much on. If you remember, like back in the RAM days, I was really it was really hard to balance studying.
Yeah, you would
with
be
it.
Like, if there was a break in rehearsals or like,
yeah, school, I'd run out and teach.
You'd run out and teach, but also you wouldn't be in the building past a certain hour.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think another negative of that was that when it was pub time after rehearsals, I would just go and teach. And I think once you get a taste of a certain level of income, it's kind of hard to say no to that.
Yeah.
So that's how it came about, just saying yes. Do I regret it? Not at all, because when I graduated, and more importantly, before I graduated, during the pandemic, I had a source of income. So,
yeah, but also what was nice for you is that you didn't have to, like, yes, you can say about pub time and stuff like that, but, and there is an importance to the social aspect of going to conservatoire because a lot of things happen in the pub. But at the same time, you left with a sustainable way of living in London.
Exactly, yeah.
And I think a lot of people don't, and then they have to leave, and then they have to build that up again somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So it's like with everything, there's positives and negatives, but it is a great way, if you are a musician and you're moving to a new city, not just London, and you're looking for work, I have to work a lot less hours teaching than what I would if I was waitressing or working at Winter Wonderland. So it's a good use of your time. And it also builds you as a as a musician as well, to like listen and actually teach it as well. And yeah. It's not just teaching music. If you've got a skill in English, as you do with Hebrew, teaching is a good source of income.
Yeah. I think the difference, though, with teaching a language and teaching a language at the level that I do, is that the turnover is quite fast. Because I have, like, an event that the kids are working towards or the students are working towards. Whereas with you, you can keep teaching the same student for years on end. So, like, you can really build something. Whereas every 10 months, I have to build up my studio again.
Yeah.
Which is a bit more complicated. And I am trying to move into the music world. But it is not as simple for me for some reason.
Mm.
But that's not... We're not about me now. We're not in my hot seat.
We will be.
We soon. Will be. So... Going back, what pushed you to go to music college in the first place?
After I started focusing on classical singing, I was performing a lot as a child. I was in stage school, I was doing productions, local productions, and I just thrived on it. And it was what I was just known for. Ashley, she performs, she sings. But I loved that at the time, and I just started to look into how I would make that happen as a career. And so I started looking up the music colleges, and it was a goal of mine to get in for undergrad, leave Blythe at 18 and go to London. I auditioned and got on the reserves for RAM for undergrad, but didn't get in. And so I got into Durham to study music instead. Durham was great, but it was very academic, and I just always had this passion that I wanted to perform. I didn't want to be in the library. I wanted to be on the stage. So it was still a goal that I was working towards to get into music college, applied for my master's, and got in. So I think it was rooted in my passion for performance as a child, and I was very, very lucky to have a supportive network, a fantastic music department in my school, also my mum being the music teacher at the school helped just with that support and passion and like knowing where to look. So yeah, I had a really good backing. And it wasn't just me that was wanting to get into music college. I feel like I had a lot of the schools backing behind me as well.
Yeah. It's interesting also that you still can get a music degree outside, but how different the music degree is between a music college and a university.
It's very different. And we've talked about it a lot on the podcast, but... I've lived it, and it's different.
It's
period.
Different. So then, was life after music college what you expected it to be?
Not at all.
What did you expect it to be?
Now, I will admit, and it kind of runs on from the experience I had as a child, as a kid, wanting to get into music college and having that excitement and support around me, like Ashley's going to try and get into music college. I was so naive, and I did think that if I moved to London and accepted a scholarship to the Royal Academy of Music, that was life sorted out. I won't even pretend that was my line of thought. And it's not like that at all.
Unfortunately.
I was so naive. And I'm sure that there are kids out there that think that. And unfortunately, it's not like that. But I also think, how boring would it be if that was the case?
Also, it would be closing off the opportunities to anyone who didn't go to music college.
Exactly. And as we've now learned on the podcast, music college is not the only route into performing or working within the opera industry. So following on from that, I would say that both me and you graduated music college at a very unique time.
Yes.
We graduated in 2020 and we were still amongst the pandemic. And that was really hard. And my passion that I felt as a 15, 16-year-old had just disappeared by this point. We'd finished the last year of music college online and it just wasn't the same. And it just was a really strange world to be in. After that, I'm so, so grateful to have got a chorus contract at Opera Holland Park. That was my first audition out of the pandemic. And I was so nervous for that. But I'm so glad that I got it, because we found out that news in the December and I had something to look forward to and keep me going, keep me singing to get to the summer and do a good job at Holland Park. And that was just a really interesting time. I had the best time, but still something wasn't quite sitting right with me. I was so happy to be performing, but I actually think, to put a positive spin on the pandemic and the lack of work, it really gave me time as an individual to kind of step off that treadmill of study, work, study, work. And that led to me discovering a bit more about what I wanted as a musician, as a performer. I found that I wasn't necessarily enjoying practicing arias anymore, as you know, and I haven't really opened up about this on the podcast before, but I didn't go for those rounds of auditions in autumn 2022. I just had no passion to learn a set of arias and get my audition bag ready that we're told to have. So I didn't, and I had friends around me going for the auditions. I don't feel like I missed out on anything. And that just then led to me to question, if I am to perform and I am to be that performer that I always wanted to be, I need to be singing what I enjoy. And I just started exploring more repertoire. I began singing for me and practicing for me. I went back to my roots in musical theatre and started exploring that. And where I am today is that I want to be a performer. I don't aspire to be an opera singer. I aspire to be a performer who gets work in musical theatre, gets work singing at events and weddings, and just singing repertoire that is a little bit more mainstream, because that is personally what I connect with a little bit more. And there's a whole thing of like, why do I connect with that more? Do I not connect with opera? Absolutely I do. And singing opera is something that I will always do and always still have. I just don't want to put myself in that box. So that has been my very rough journey from music college to where I am now. And it all comes round again to say it wasn't anything that I expected it to be. But I'm glad I am where I am now.
Yeah, and we've had this conversation as well, obviously, because we talk without the microphone in front of us as well.
Yeah.
But the fact that there are so many things that you still gain from doing the route that you did, and the fact that you are able to have a conversation with yourself and say, you know what, I need to go in the route that's best for me, not the route that was set out for me.
Exactly. And I think to actually still be pursuing performance is something that might not have happened, because how low I was in the pandemic, had no passion for it anymore. And the fact that actually all that needed to change was what I was singing and what I was aiming for. And I went through a whole conversation with myself of, have I wasted the last 2 years at RAM? Have I wasted people's money? And the answer to that is absolutely not. And I am totally at one with that now. Because even if I did choose not to sing, that time at RAM taught me entrepreneurship. It taught me hard work.
And it taught you performance skills, even if it's not the same production.
Exactly, like being just a confident person that can communicate themselves well, then yeah, it's not a loss at all. And I'm pleased to say now that having a master's in performance at RAM is just the perfect certificate, perfect piece of paper to do what I want to do. It's not a master's in opera, it's a master's in performance. And yeah, I can now say from experience, having that thing on the CV has helped me get auditions that I've had now. So yeah, don't regret it at all.
I'm very excited about this next question.
Oh, is there another one?
There's another one.
I feel like I'm talking for ages. Goodness me.
You're not. We are now at episode 100.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think we got here?
Oh, gosh. How did we get here? I think the podcast is built on a good friendship.
Agreed.
And I think the podcast wouldn't be what it is if we'd just kind of been randomly like paired together. I don't know in what world that would have happened, but we discussed this podcast. Well, came up with the idea of a podcast during a walk through Regent's Park. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like sat at the RAM singers table, it might have been. I don't remember exactly, but it was a discussion that came through friendship.
Yeah.
And a mutual passion for the industry. That how it came about. To how we got to where we are.
It's a hard question.
It's a really hard question.
It's just interesting because it's been such a journey. So like what we started with versus where we are now and how we've changed also as people quite a bit. Like I think we both have,
yeah.
Yeah, I think we both mellowed out in different ways.
Yeah.
And came to a realization of like what is important to us versus what is important to other people in the industry.
Yeah, I don't think that we try and please others as much as we once did. I was such a people pleaser.
Same.
And I'm probably still am, but I now can think for myself and I make decisions for myself more than I do what other people want for me. And I feel like the way the podcast has grown, we've got guests on here because we've wanted those guests on here.
But I think we were always quite entrepreneurial, each of us, and I think that was something that really bound us as a team. Like we had a vision, we had an idea, and we're like, we can make this work.
Yes. I do think that, like me having a vision of what music college would bring, I think we both started the podcast in the first sort of year of the podcast. We had extremely high expectations. And whilst we still have big visions for the podcast, I think we've both become more realistic in what the podcast is and how it benefits us as a team, but also individuals as well.
Yeah. What I like about the podcast most is that when I get really... I'm someone who works really well with deadlines.
Uh-huh.
And you are someone who's like, yeah, there is a deadline, but that's okay. And I freak out right before a deadline.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I didn't do it on time. Blah, 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 blah. And I need to get this and I need to get that. And you're like, Avi, it's okay.
It's fine. I think one of my most recent mantras is that you don't owe anybody anything. But that's tricky because you can't just live your life by that and just like wander through and just not meet any deadline. But whenever I do get stressed about deadlines, but I take a deep breath and tell myself that I don't owe anybody anything.
Yeah. And I'm not like that.
Yeah.
I'm like, everyone's depending on me. I'm going to let everybody down.
But yeah, I mean, it's great to be sat here at episode 100 today. It has been an absolute pleasure creating all of these episodes. There's been ups and downs, like there is in everything. But yeah, like, the podcast is better for it.
I think there's also a sense of honesty between us and between the work that we do.
Yeah.
Is that we feel like if we have to, we have to be honest with each other about what we're going through.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that comes across also in the sense that on the podcast, we can have serious conversations because we're able to do that. Both we know where we tread.
Exactly. And I think being friends for several years, the friendship grows and you feel more comfortable being like, no, or that's not going to work. And that's what makes the podcast work, is communication and honesty.
Yeah. It's always the best policy.
Oh, look at that. What a way to finish. Welcome to our podcast. It's called AA Opera. Welcome. Would you like to start by introducing yourself to our listeners?
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. My name is Avi Green. I am a mezzo-soprano and a podcaster. And I do a lot of other things that have to do with opera and technology, all opera and social media, I would say. In the past, I've done more. But I like to get opera into the next generation.
Indeed, and that's exactly what we're going to be talking about today. But first, can you tell us what your first experience of opera was?
So I was thinking about this. I've mentioned a bunch of times that like the first opera I went to was at the Israeli Opera House, that I went to see Don Carlo. But thinking about it, actually, when I was younger, we used to spend our summers in New York with my grandparents. And we would go to Central Park where they would have concerts in the park.
Oh, nice.
And I remember going to a bunch of concerts in the park where they had opera singers singing. I could not tell you who they were now. But, like, I remember having opera in that sense. Like, the way of singing was familiar to me.
Mm.
And then I really got into it quite similar to how you did, in the sense that, like, I went to a singing teacher to learn singing.
Mm-hmm.
And just like everyone, I was like, I'm going to be on Broadway. And at that point, like, that was my dream, was to be on Broadway.
Yeah.
But I really wanted to be on Broadway. And at that time, I was really into musical theater and niche musical theater, too. Mm-hmm. I really liked knowing what was out there. So that was my plan. But then I started to find out that a lot of musicals were based on operas, and then I wanted to see the original ones because I was really interested in history, and I was like, oh, it's the original. It must be better. It's like, it's based on a book. You must read the book. And then I was very jealous because my brother got to go see La Traviata with my parents, and I knew the story of La Traviata really well. But then I went a couple months later, with the same brother and my dad to see Don Carlo, and I got really excited, and I dressed up.
Oh, wow.
I was like, I'm going to be so dressed up. And yeah, it was very grand on stage, not necessarily in the opera house. That I then worked at for a long time afterwards. But yeah, that was my first kind of experience with seeing Don Carlos. But I had already been like, I need to see something.
Yeah. Do you know what I find most intriguing about your answer there is that you are a woman of knowledge when it comes to opera plots storylines, history of operas, you're just the go-to gal, right? And it just impresses me, I guess. I guess it doesn't surprise me, but it's nice to hear that even before opera, you were the same with musicals, like just always wanting to know history, but like background plot of those things. It's no surprise, but it's quite interesting for me to hear that. Yeah,
I was that way with ballet as well, because I started off in ballet.
Mm.
And that was also, it's like, I think knowing it was the same composers as ballet was mm-hmm. like, oh my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I've always been a history nerd.
Yeah. Really cool. Now, people that know you and have been following you for a while know that social media and content creation is one of your main specialities. So I want to know, where did this all begin and how did your YouTube channel come about?
Good question. So when I was in between my first year at Maastricht and Academy, because I decided to drop out of school. It wasn't the right place for me, which is, I think, really important to say.
Yeah.
I think there was a big stigma when I dropped out saying, oh, maybe this, like, I'm thinking that I was too snobby about the placement that I was, but it was actually like, it just wasn't the right place for me, and that's okay. And I do believe that everyone has a different experience in different places, and I just think it's really important to say that, and that it's okay for you not to fit in where other people fit in.
That's really good to hear. Yeah.
So I dropped out, but it was the second time I had dropped out of school. And being the hunger for knowledge that I have, it's interesting. You said you did not want to be in an academic setting.
Yeah.
Part of me would love to be in an academic setting, except the other part of me is like, you're very dyslexic. You can't do it at the same pace as a university would want you to do it.
Mm.
But with that being said, I didn't want to spend a year far away from the knowledge I could gain from being in a conservatoire setting. So I set out to create my own learning experience, which kind of was like, I'm going to share my experience of learning about becoming an opera singer and the different aspects of becoming an opera singer and being an opera singer that are out there. And I think something that's very important and something that really kind of pisses me off when people sing operas or arias from operas or just scenes, they just know their one scene or their one aria. And I'm like, you gotta know the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I'm the type of person who, like, loves knowing this stuff. And I don't mean it like, oh, everyone should be like me. No, I mean, like, I genuinely love finding fun facts and trivia, and I love trivia. And I thrive in that area of, like, research and development of scripts.
Mm-hmm.
And if I was creative enough to be an author, I would love to write a book. But I don't have that sense of otherworldliness. Like, I feel like it's like also being a composer. I would love to be a composer, but I don't have that aspect of, like, creating something out of nothing in that way.
I think I know what you mean. Yeah.
And when it comes to relaying plot and getting people excited about something and adding a comical, like, twist to something that could be quite depressing, I am good at that. And I am good at making people laugh, I think. So I kind of put that all together and made my own kind of learning experience that I was hoping would grow and keep me going. And it did for a while.
Yeah. Speaking of putting a comic twist on opera. The guy you shared on your Instagram the other day, Brandon Manuel, he started doing like playing extracts from operas and rewriting the words to it to give what's basically going on in the plot in that sense. But it was, yeah, fun times. Yeah. Excellent. So we're going to fast forward to today. And with regards to YouTube, you're no longer using that as much as a platform, as a form of output, social output. Why is this?
I had a very rough year last year. And I'm not going to get fully into it just because it's quite personal. But I had a rough year and I had to make decisions about what was helpful and what made me feel good. And what was giving back. And unfortunately, I wasn't feeling... Unfortunately, that whole YouTube world was quite lonely and isolating to me at that time. And after COVID, and we mentioned COVID also on your side and how it really affected you, for me it affected me in a way of loneliness, and I felt like I was doing a lot of things just because, and it wasn't like it was had the same impact on me as it did before. And I felt like, and we mentioned this also before, I feel like I owe people a lot.
Yeah.
And I felt like I wasn't going to be able to give them what I wanted to give. And I was just so drained of being alone on that platform. And I know I'm not alone. Like, I know other people do stuff. But it's not the creative world that YouTube used to be, that people collaborate. And it's very hard to cut through that. I would love to go back. I would love to do YouTube again. But I think I would need to be in a place that I didn't feel so isolated in that world. And it would be easier. And also, if you have to watch the operas via streaming services, because I wasn't able to go to the theater as much because financially everything was a bit more complicated.
Yeah.
Then that's also another thing that's lonely. And when I started this, I had a opera group, basically like a book club, but we would meet Tuesday mornings because we're all opera singers and didn't have work in the morning. And we would watch an opera. And so I would do them according to what we were watching. So it was like some of them according to what we were watching. So at least I had, you know, some people to comment back on it, talk about it. It was like more of a community thing. And then I kind of lost that when I came to the UK. And it's hard to gain that when you want something and you don't necessarily know people. It's hard to create that.
I totally hear you. And I feel like I can understand or imagine why you were feeling that way. Just knowing that obviously creating a podcast is another form of creating, but we've gone through that together. And I remember being at RAM with you and always knowing that you had a YouTube channel. And generally, people would know at RAM that you would have a YouTube channel. And for some reason, there's this like disconnect and lack of understanding, I think, from people who watch YouTube videos with the people that are creating the YouTube videos. Like, so much effort goes into those videos. I know from watching you, I know from trying it myself and failing miserably, that so much effort goes into creating that content, and you will never understand that as a viewer if you've not, you know, tried it yourself, or people would just make very passive comments, I think, about YouTube and your YouTube channel, when actually the content that you were creating was fantastic content, but you weren't seeing that return. And that's lonely if you're doing it by yourself. Whereas I know we felt at times like that with the podcast, but but we've got each other.
Yeah. And it's one of those things also where when you put information out there, it's a bit of a popularity contest. And I got really aggravated during COVID when every other person who I actually would hear in the computer lab, that's not what it's called, in the student union, make fun of YouTubers. And then suddenly, they have a YouTube channel and they have hundreds of views overnight because they're popular. And that's fine. That's not who I am and I'm not upset about that. But the point is that, like, it is a popularity contest and it's recognizing that some people have a huge support network that thrives on both sides. But when I said that I had a YouTube channel, it wasn't getting that traction.
Yeah.
And I'm not upset about that.
No, it's not coming across like that at all. I think it's just understanding that there's a lot of things that have to be aligned and everyone's story is different. Every creator has their own story when it comes to that. And I just think you've been really brave to just listen to yourself and think, is this what I want? And you've then gone on to make decisions. And there's no reason why you couldn't go back in future. As we've talked about so far already, we've changed so much over the last few years. There's going to be more changes over the coming years as well. So, you know, it's always there and it's a skill, and it's a skill that you've grown. Yeah.
The itch is still there.
Yeah.
One day it will be fulfilled.
But the reason why I asked that question in the first place was to ask, from your perspective, how has social media evolved generally, and how can the opera industry use it successfully?
I think the opera industry has a lot to learn about social media. And the social media world changes on a monthly basis. And you have to be super fast with it. And it's quite different from how the opera industry has been running, where it's like, we're not going to fix this situation. We like it the way it is. This is how it's been going on. Blah, 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 blah. But that's not the world we live in. And the opera industry can learn a lot from how social media works. Not necessarily in, like, creating content. I think it needs to be creative and innovative content that works for the social groups that come to the opera, but also for the environment of the opera. Like, I think you do have to find a balance.
Yeah.
But if we're trying to, and this isn't even about getting new audiences in, this is about cultivating the audience you already have. And I think there's a lack of understanding about who goes to the opera, who wants to go to the opera, and who's making the opera. And I think the people who are making the opera versus the people performing in the opera or trying to gain access to the industry are also very, very different people. And the conversations aren't happening across all these different like categories of people. So I think what social media can do, it can bind a lot of these people. And what we can learn from social media is how different industries use them and take from that what we can. The way that, and I say this to a lot of people when I meet them and when we have them on the podcast, and obviously the microphone's off, but like what we can learn from Hollywood and what we can learn from the past of the opera industry. The opera industry used to have mega stars. And if you were in the opera, you were also in Hollywood. You were on the red carpet. And I understand that not everybody wants to be that kind of singer, but there needs to be a route that is available to do that. And there needs to be the option to be Mario Lanza, who headlined movies. And the reason that people came to see Pagliacci for the 14th time was because Mario Lanza was in it. But the fact that we don't cultivate the people who are making the opera or the people performing in the opera, and we use those names quite quietly. Like, a lot of times, unless you're in the industry, you wouldn't know who the opera stars are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that needs to change. That needs to be, we have a cross, that needs to change because we need to have faces, not just industry.
Can I ask you why you think it is? Obviously, this is one opinion. This is your opinion, and it's a really hard question.
But I think the reason it is the way it is because the opera industry is based on funding from governments, and you can't fund a person. You can fund an arts council. You can fund a community,
mm-hmm.
and I think that needs to change.
Yeah,
I think the way we make money in this industry has to change. One, because funding's never going to be able to pay enough salaries for enough people. Two, there's only so much you can do when you're on a tight budget. And imagine if your income was so much greater and your sources of income were much more varied, you would have a lot more potential for what you can accomplish both on and off stage.
Can I add on to that and say that I think it's rooted a little bit further back than when it comes round to the finances? And I just think, similar to what I talked about in the direction that I have chosen to take, why did I have such a problem with my thoughts there of branching out into different genres?
Yes, no, it's true.
And it's because there's so much stigma attached to the industry, and not just genres of singing, but taking on other work alongside a career in singing. There's just like, it's not encouraged in all of the circles that it should be. It's encouraged in a platform like two young women talking on a podcast. We encourage it, but in the professional circles, and especially higher up in those professional circles, I feel there's a lot of judgment there that needs to be
knocked down,
yeah.
But also, I think it's partially to the way that we structure things. So if you're going to say you can only do this, you're capping your talent. You're capping your industry. Like, if the only person I can think of who does it all is Kelly O'Hara.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she's fantastic. And the fact that she does all of that should be celebrated. It should not be a taboo.
Yeah. It's the same with Renee Fleming as well.
Exactly.
She's gone and done a jazz album and that sort of thing.
Right. And in her book that came out about 10 years ago,
yeah,
she talks about how she had to pick. And I feel like that's the wrong attitude for the future of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if we look back, people did everything.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not the technique of singing was as developed as it is now,
yeah,
it doesn't matter. It was successful. People could live. Like, Maria Callas was an icon.
Yeah.
But how many people can you think about who are in this industry now who are icons?
Mm.
The numbers aren't that great.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we can learn from social media industry, is how we kind of make ordinary people doing what they love special. And that's what influencers are. But if you add an influencer with an extreme talent, like an opera singer,
mm-hmm.
the options are endless.
I love that. Yeah. Oh, what a good combo. Love it. But we're not done.
We're not done.
We are not done. I am so excited to ask this question because we often ask our guests, what's next for you? What's coming up for you? And you have something very exciting to share. So, Avi, what is next for you?
What's next for me is I am going to be doing Opera Holland Park, but 8 months pregnant.
It's out. Oh, I feel like a weight it's off my shoulders. Never mind you. Never mind you. Who's just like announced
this
it.
Is not off my shoulders yet.
But firstly, I mean, congratulations, I'm sure.
So I have a really hard time with hearing congratulations in pregnancy. Because in Judaism, you don't say that. You say in good time. Because, like, you don't know what's going to happen. So, like, that's my brain, like, my superstitious brain. Superstitious brain. But everyone's like, oh, my God, congratulations. I'm like,
thank you. All in good time.
All in good time. All in good time. Let's keep the congratulations until the baby comes out. On time.
On time, yeah. But it really is the best news, and obviously wonderful that you're going to be within the support network of Upper Holland Park when you're 8 months pregnant. And I think I need to give you a superwoman cape now, but I'm just really, I'm just so pleased for you and to Matt as well.
Yeah, this has been an interesting... So Ashley has known for a very, very long time. You're one of the first people I told. Because we had a podcast meeting day and I was in a bad mood.
Oh, she's going to come clean about this. I love it. Okay.
I'm going to come clean about the whole thing. And I felt so guilty. And Ashley was just like, Avi, it's too much. And then I called her on the weekend. I was like, I just want to explain something. No. I am with child.
I literally lost it. I was like,
I sent you a picture of the pregnancy
test. Yeah, it was like a teddy bear and a pregnancy test before any phone call. It was just a picture of a teddy bear and a pregnancy test. And
Winnie the Pooh.
I was like, I just like opened my phone and I just like just looked at the picture. Like if this was a video podcast, I was just like trying to figure it out. Like I was like,
is this a riddle?
A part of me was like ready to burst with excitement. But I was like, could it be? Does she mean that? I was like, in processing in my head, well, it couldn't mean anything else. I was like, what? Okay. And then I like rang you. I was like, yeah, this is happening.
Especially because most people who have been on this side of the microphone would know that we were trying to adopt originally. So this was a very big surprise to a lot of people.
Yeah.
But yeah, the best was when we told Matt's siblings. He went through the whole adoption process and how the adoption process works and the fact that we weren't going to be able to move forward with adoption. And then he was like, but Avi's pregnant, so it's okay. And his sister was like, way to bury the fucking lead. They were all so disappointed too. They were like, oh, I'm really sorry to hear that. Like, you know, boom. Oh. And then boom, Matt comes in with that. And then but I have been feeling not great.
You have not.
Trimester is bullshit in my pregnancy. It's the whole pregnancy has been the first trimester so far.
So like at the beginning of the podcast when you were saying, I'm really looking forward to March. And the reason why you're looking forward to March is that, you know, you're officially in second trimester.
I'm already in second.
But I know you're already there, but we're still waiting for that to kick in properly, really. With regards to the sickness and all of that. But you are soldiering on.
Yeah.
I must say.
But it's been interesting. So, yeah. But I'm currently 5 months pregnant and still feeling like I just found out I'm pregnant.
But also as well, how many episodes have we done where in season 7 where we've been like, so what's new with you? What's going on this week? And then obviously most of Avi's week has been consumed with being, you know, sick. Pregnancy sickness and all of that, and we've not been able to talk about it, but as of now in episode 101 you guys are in the know now. So
yes, very exciting. We don't know what it is yet.
And what a time to release this news on episode 100 as well,
because the podcast is growing.
Yeah.
Growing. We are getting a new team member.
Yeah.
So
you'll have to choose a name with A. I feel, because like
it wouldn't work otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, what if like I have a child and you have a child, and we both name them beginning with A, and then in 20 years' time, they start an AA Opera podcast, volume 2.
And that is it for episode 100. Thank you so much for our guest, Ashley.
And thank you so much to our guest, Abby.
We are so excited about the future of this podcast as it keeps growing, and so glad that you guys have been here for 100 episodes.
Yes, and thank you so, so much for following us and sticking with us. Make sure that you are following us over on the socials as well. We are AA Opera everywhere.
Everywhere.
Absolutely everywhere.
But yeah, and if you feel like buying us a coffee to keep us energized
and help celebrate, come on, episode 100.
Episode 100. That deserves a cup of coffee.
It does indeed.
Then you can buy us a coffee over on Buy Me a Coffee. The information is down in our podcast link below, as well as on our Instagram bio.
Indeed. And if you could drop a 5-star rating and subscribe to the podcast, why not? That would really help us out. But thank you so much, and we will be back next week, as always, with a brand new episode.
Episode 101.
Great.
Bye-bye.